I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Keep pace with a teenage thief as he steals from a wealthy ski resort to support his family. Join retired actors as they adjust to retired life and catch up with a group of people followed by documentarians since they were 7 years old. These are the themes of some of the latest indie foreign and documentary films hitting area screens. And today our critics will look at these as well as the short films nominated for Oscars. Films worth watching on Up to Date following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The Oscar-nominated short films are out, and critic Cynthia Haynes calls them excellent mini-movies in just the right doses. If you're interested in excellent movie-making, also out today is Amour, the much-talked-about film that's been nominated for an Oscar about an elderly French couple confronting end-of-life issues. We'll talk about that and a whole batch of new films that are now showing in area theaters with our film critics. They are film professor Cynthia Haynes. Cynthia, how are you?
Doing well,
welcome.
Thank you.
KCUR's own Steve Walker. Steven.
How are you?
And Bob Butler, the former film critic for The Star, who now works at the Kansas City Public Library. You can read his movie reviews at butlerscinemascene.com.
Good
Bob,
day.
How are you? Nice
Good
to have
day.
You. Well, Cynthia, you're back from your sojourn to La La Land, where you attended the Critics' Choice Awards. Any parting thoughts about that trip that are worth sharing here?
Well, it was most fun. Of course, the highlight for me, and we had a little conversation, a remote, I guess, from Los Angeles, and it's still Daniel Day-Lewis. I just won't ever get over that conversation with him, with a question that was posed by Bob Butler before I left.
Remind us about that conversation, how that went and what you talked about.
Well, I think this is what you meant,
Bob. This is the Star of Lincoln, by the way.
Yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Daniel Day-Lewis. Before the program started, I went up to him. He's about 6'5". I mean, he's a very tall, thin man, but with this incredible aura. And I had asked Bob before I left if there was anything he'd like me to ask Lewis. And he said, well, ask him, since he has been so submerged in this character for so long, it's been so much a part of his life, is there anything from that experience that he's going to bring to his own life?
Something like that.
Yeah. And so I asked him the question, and then he was silent, and I thought, oh, that was a stupid question, Bob. I didn't blame him. And then what he was thinking, and he said, it's too soon to tell. And then he paused, and he said, but I certainly hope so. And it was like,
That's a great answer.
You know, it was just wonderful.
Was he approachable?
Very approachable and very charming. He is very shy. I'm just amazed by that.
Most of the big stars at an event like that, are they approachable? Well, can you walk up as a critic from Kansas City and say, hey,
I'll tell you.
You can't.
I haven't been invited yet, by the way.
Right, me neither.
Well, this organization, it's the Broadcast Film Critics Association, and it's the first group that gives awards broadcast on television. 3 days later are the Golden Globes. So everyone's in town. Everyone comes to this, and and I think I made the point last time I was on the air that the critics are the first to see these films. I mean, how many people would have seen Amour if critics hadn't raved about it?
Mm-hmm.
Silver Linings Playbook. How many people would have gone to see that movie if the critics in the beginning? So the actors and the filmmakers are happy to be there because these are the people who championed their movies way back when. So they're there. They haven't started this absurd marathon where they've gone from award show to award show. So by the time the Oscars come around, it's February 24th, mm-hmm. they're exhausted. They've answered the same question 100 times. They're tired. The same people are winning all the awards. It's all anticlimactic. What's fun is that it's fresh, it's new, they're enthusiastic, they're happy to be there, and they have no idea what the which films are going to be the big winners, and they always know that it's the word harbinger of the
of
what's
going to
come.
Well, how do you get to go to this and Steve Walker doesn't?
That's an excellent question, Kraske.
That's a tough one.
I mean, we're all here together, and I should go too, for that matter. I've been pushing that for years and gotten nowhere with it. But how does this work?
They set a rule years ago that you can't have two people from the same program belong to the organization.
So you just aced them out.
Well, she was on this program long before I was,
yes,
if you recall.
I do. Yeah.
So that's it has been a bone of contention between us ever
a little
since.
Bit.
But
not you know, bloody or anything.
But anyway, it is very nice to be able to approach them and also let them know how much you've enjoyed their performances, and they're more than willing to pose for photos and stuff. So,
and most of them are willing to do that. They know
absolutely.
That's part of the gig
absolutely.
And everything else. Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess any last words here, Steve?
Well,
they won't let you, will it?
Well, back in the day, I got to do a few junkets, and I went on the Crucible one and got to interview Arthur Miller, the author,
and
Daniel Day-Lewis, et cetera. And so if you play 6 degrees, I'm 2 degrees from Marilyn Monroe, so go figure.
Isn't that
true?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As a result of that experience, who did Daniel Day-Lewis marry?
Arthur Miller's daughter, Rebecca.
That's right.
And she was there.
Yeah.
She's married to her still, I believe.
Yep.
Yes,
she was at the award show. She's a lovely woman. Absolutely lovely.
Okay. It's an interesting world, isn't it? Okay. Let's move on to some films that are just opening, and the big one, a lot of folks talking about, critics raving about, Amour. Bob Butler, tell us about it.
Wow.
It's an elderly French couple confronting end-of-life issues is what we're talking about here.
This is a film from a fellow named Michael Haneke. He's an Austrian, and he has made movies that some people have considered sadistic and very nasty.
Sick.
Funny Games is a movie about a couple of creeps that basically kidnap a vacationing family and make them beg for their lives he liked that movie so much he remade it as an English version a few years later.
The most repulsive movie I've ever seen.
So here's this guy that has a reputation for making vile movies. What does he do? He makes a heartbreaking, although I wouldn't say manipulatively heartbreaking, but he makes a heartbreaking movie about a pair of French octogenarians. She is having, whether it's a stroke or Alzheimer's or something, they never tell us, but is a movie set almost entirely in their Paris apartment as he tries to care for her as she fades away. Now, this is not a cruel movie, but it is a merciless movie in the sense that it observes. It doesn't comment.
Right.
It just watches, and you find yourself in the role of either the wife who's vanishing or the husband who stubbornly wants to be her caregiver. In fact, he fires professional caregivers because he doesn't think they're good enough. But you can imagine the situation. You're in your 80s trying to care for another 80-year-old person who is basically not there anymore.
Bob, isn't the key to this the casting? I mean,
absolutely. Jean-Louis Trintignant, one of the great film stars of the French cinema.
A Man and a Woman.
It goes way back.
The Conformist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Emmanuel Riva, who is nominated for an Oscar, the oldest woman ever nominated for an Oscar in the acting category.
Mm-hmm. She's 84, yeah.
She is brilliant as this person who is like starts out a fantastic, vibrant personality and then just.
And it happens so quick. They're at breakfast one morning after going to a concert the night before, and all of a sudden she just freezes and is gone and comes back and doesn't realize she's been gone. And that's the slow. That scene takes probably 10 minutes
it
starts.
It's very real time.
And this movie would be too sad to endure were it not for these two performances of these people.
Yeah.
Which are remarkable.
Remarkable.
And their daughter is played by Isabelle Huppert.
Huppert.
And she does a good job. I had problems with the length of this movie. I really did. And I think part of my problem had to be the fact that I saw one of the most moving films on this subject about 10 years ago called A Song for Martin. It's Swedish. Again, we're dealing with musicians there. Iris is another film with Judi Dench that I thought was incredibly moving, even away from her.
Yeah.
Dealt with a similar subject. And so this one, after having seen those films, which had truly a profound emotional effect on me, all of those films, Amour, It lost me.
You know,
really
that, I think it has to do with the fact that Haneke, who was, by the way, nominated for Best Director, Best Screenplay. The movie is both nominated for Best Picture and Best Foreign Film.
Right. So that's got that five, hardly ever happens.
Five nominations. He is the sort of director who, on one level, is almost impassive. He's a very intellectual director. And he isn't, you know, yanking our tear ducts here at all or twisting
and
our
arms. And he doesn't
want
to.
He doesn't want to. And for, some people are going to find that just a little too chilly to be, well, frankly, bearable. On the other hand, there's an almost kind of documentary feel about this, the sense that you're watching day by day as this this awful thing happens, which happens to lots of people. I've been getting email from readers to my blog who say, my husband, I couldn't possibly watch this. I lived through it.
Well, the movie, interestingly enough, you mentioned Funny Games, opens with a home invasion of a sorts. And that's the police entering this apartment that no one has seen the residents forever and ever and ever. And then we go back to the concert. Mm-hmm. I think it's a horror film in its own way, but the horror is something every one of us will face.
Well, and that you know? And that screen is
not
acting,
me, buddy.
The screen is acting like a mirror. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what, also what makes it difficult as you sit there and you're thinking.
This is a true story from my callow youth. When I was a cub reporter for The Star, I once picked up a police call to go to this midtown seedy transient hotel. And an elderly couple were found dead in their bed in their room. And the cops said, well, it's either a murder-suicide or a double suicide. The wife had been sick, blah, blah, blah. And at that stage in my life, I was not really ready to contemplate the backstory to this sad scene. And after seeing this movie, I'm going, whoa. Yeah.
It's an extraordinary movie, and the Kansas City Film Critics Circle also voted it Best Foreign Film. And it's won the Globe. It's won
a lot of things. But you all are sort of, I'm sensing here, if you're going to go see this film.
Be prepared.
Be prepared.
Gird yourself, because this is going to be an experience, and a heavy experience at that, right?
Right. That's right. But it is, unlike so many movies, it is worth the investment of your time.
Okay. Let's move on to one other film that's opened up today, opening up today, Side Effects, Steve Walker. It's about the world of a successful New York couple shattered when a drug prescribed by the wife's psychiatrist has unexpected side effects.
Yes, it does have unexpected side effects. The first is sleepwalking. The couple are played by Channing Tatum and Rooney Mara, who is really, it's her first big performance since Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. She's great in this movie. What's interesting is
she was the tattooed girl.
She was, in the American version, right? Mm-hmm. This is Soderbergh's. Steven Soderbergh says this is his last feature film. He's got one more film coming out on HBO this year, the Liberace movie with Michael Douglas and Matt Damon in their palimony fight.
Michael Douglas and Matt Damon? Who plays Liberace?
Michael Douglas, and Damon plays
Michael Douglas is playing Liberace.
And he's got the hair.
He does have that. I was just going to say, I'm processing this as you're saying it.
Damon plays his cheap boyfriend who sued him for palimony. Remember that story?
What
from
a
the
casting
80s?
Call.
I know.
That's amazing.
No studio picked it up. No studio wanted it, so
why?
It went to HBO.
Well, you know, that's something we've often talked about. A cable channel, which is... doesn't have to sell tickets,
right?
Can take the money that subscribers have given them and make daring movies.
Exactly.
A movie company that has to depend on the box office will not do that. They won't take the risk.
Michael Douglas and Matt Damon couldn't sell that film to a major, you know.
But let's go back to Side Effects. I think you're better.
Okay. Are we getting sidetracked?
A little bit.
On Side Effects,
I'm
Steve?
Sleepwalking.
Yes, I understand.
Anyway, Channing Tatum's in prison for insider trading. He gets out after 4 years. He's married to Rooney Mara. They live in New York, a kind of plush kind of life. And then she begins to – she tries to kill herself basically in the first 10 minutes by ramming her car into a parking lot wall. So she goes to be treated. Her psychiatrist is Jude Law, who ends up putting her on medication that isn't proven yet. He's got a deal with this pharmaceutical company. We'll pay you $50,000 to test this medication. I don't know if they've tested it on hamsters or anything
else. Does he tell this to his patient?
No, not so much.
And why would you bother with that, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's a minor detail.
So her first symptom of side effects from this untested medication is this sleepwalking where she does things that she doesn't remember. But we can't go any further with that, can we, Bob?
Well, you really can't. This is one of those movies that... You hear about spoiler alerts.
Right.
There's a spoiler alert about every 10 seconds in this movie. You think the movie is one thing, then it becomes another thing, then it becomes a totally different kind of movie, and finally it settles into a more conventional thriller.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it's very entertaining. Ultimately, Jude Law's under suspicion because his patient has done something horrible. And he meets Catherine Zeta-Jones, who was also Rooney Mara's psychiatrist when she was younger. Mm-hmm. So Jude Law's had a problem with a patient in London, and there's all these kinds of levels of stuff going on that keep you entertained. And our clip is Jude Law and Catherine Zeta-Jones discussing their patient.
This is from Side Effects.
John, you can't follow them around, taking things out of their hands they might use to hurt themselves. We see them for an hour a day, maybe a couple of times a week.
I think they're going to charge her.
With what? You said she has no memory, no criminal intent. They can't do that.
That's a short clip, but
yes, it is.
Soderbergh is a wonderful director, and what's interesting about the way he's filmed this is it's almost all like in close up, and he plays with dark and light and shadows. There's scenes where Jude Law's talking or doing something, and all we see is him in silhouette. Did you notice that?
Yeah, very rarely do you get a full-on shot of him.
Rooney Mara, I was very impressed with. I mean, Dragon Tattoo was, I know she lost herself in that role and was quite effective and was nominated for it. But it's nice to see her that she can do something else. And she carries this movie. She
does. She plays a woman severely depressed, and sometimes just looking at her, you want a ball.
Right.
She carries grief on her face so effectively.
It's very entertaining.
You two like this stuff,
I liked
it.
It's redolent of psychological thrillers from the 80s.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie. In the end, does it mean much? Nah. It's do you remember the film, what was the one with Edward Norton and Richard Gere defending him a few years ago? Anybody? I had it on the tip of my tongue, and anyway.
You did. You said it earlier.
I said it earlier. It's one of those movies where you think it's one kind of movie, and then you think it's another kind of movie, and then it becomes a totally different movie.
Well, if this is Steven Soderbergh's last film, he'll go down in cinematic history
as someone who made Sex, Lies, and Videotape, kick-started the independent film movement and interest in independent films.
And he's also a guy capable of going through really commercial stuff, the Ocean's 11 movies,
right.
Not to mention some commercial stuff legs like Traffic, Aaron mm-hmm. Brockovich,
right.
Out of Sight, the Jennifer Lopez,
which
George
was very
Clooney.
Good, very good.
And he made all these little movies like The Limey. I mean, the guy is
the
really... And an eight-hour version of The Life of Che Guevara. Come
right,
on.
Right, right. He said there's a fascinating interview with him in the current New York Magazine where he talks about he wants to paint, and going back to what we talked about earlier about HBO, he wants to work in television.
Cynthia.
And I think he's leaving at the right time. Just to go back a little bit, you're talking about HBO and original programming. Netflix, this is revolutionary, the video or film distributor, DVD distributor, is going to start producing original programming that people can buy from Netflix. The future is in the new media. The future is in new electronics. The future is not feature filmmaking for theatrical release.
Not the way the studios treat filmmakers today. And Soderbergh basically says it in so many different ways in that interview. I've had it with Hollywood. I've had it with the money. I've had it with the studio executives. I've had it.
But nonetheless, a very significant figure in the whole independent filmmaking movement.
Oh,
yeah.
Very.
Okay.
Every one of his films is looked forward to by cineasts like us.
A quick note, Edward Norton and Richard Gere were in Primal Fear.
There you go.
Yes.
Primal Fear.
That's worth renting.
That's a very good movie. Yeah.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're going through the latest independent foreign and documentary films now showing with our critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Let's move on to one that always gets a lot of buzz every year, the 2013 Oscar-nominated short, Cynthia.
For some people, this is the highlight of the Oscar season. All they care about is getting the opportunity to see these short films.
Because they come in different genres, right? Animated
right.
shorts, live action, documentary.
And documentary mm-hmm. shorts. So there's an individual category. And usually these are the categories that trip up the odds makers. So unless you see them, you know, it's really hard to just throw a dart and say, well, maybe this one, maybe that one. And thanks to Jerry at the Tivoli, he's been doing this for years. Once again, he'll be offering the nominated short live action, I'm sorry, the animated and live action films, and then the next week he'll show the documentary films. There are five animated films for a grand total of an hour and 54 minutes, which is the length of the average film these days.
Is it really that
major
long?
Release?
Yes.
I thought they were all pretty short. That's interesting. Okay.
And five live action. The total amount of time there is 1 hour and 28 minutes. There is so much for filmmakers to learn. I think every aspiring filmmaker ought to see this series because stories are told in 10, 15, 20 minutes that are profound, that are moving, that are interesting, that are amusing, that are entertaining. And
what's the whole strength of a short story compared
exactly.
to a novel?
Right.
I mean, short stories, I've always
exactly
admired
right.
them because they say so much so compactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. In the animated category, it was amazing to realize that none of them had dialogue.
Right.
It was just music and effects.
And you know what's funny? I didn't realize that till I had watched all five of them. And then I read it somewhere and I went, oh, that's right.
No,
I mean, because you're so captivated by the imagery.
By these images. Huh. They're just wonderful. And they use different processes, the claymation and the computer-generated imagery. And Disney offers Paper Man. It's a black and white short film with a touch of red. Very sophisticated, and was shown during Wreck-It Ralph. And I guess that's where we're seeing some of these short animated films over the course of the year, tacked on to usually Disney films.
Well, you know, it's worth pointing out that I'm going to say in my youth, I won't tar anybody else with that brush, but in my youth, you could go to one of the downtown theaters, walk in any time, and you would see a newsreel, you would see a short
yes.
subject, you would
yes.
see a cartoon, you would
That's
see the trailers,
right.
and then you would see the feature, and then it would all start over again without even the lights coming up. And that was movie going as show business as opposed to just going to a movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's also the claymation Head Over Heels, which is hilarious. You've got a couple living in the same house. She's living upside down from the ceiling, and he's living down below. And it's about a couple who just can't get
Pretty
along.
Pretty good metaphor for a lot of marriages.
I was going to say.
It really is.
Metaphor much?
Yes. And
which one's the stronger set of films, the live action or the animated shorts?
I think the animated this year.
It's always the animated, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
I really do.
I'm
going to
say
wins.
I think I like the live action a little bit more this year.
And the live action, what else can you say about the live action?
There are a lot of them about children.
Yes.
There's one from Afghanistan, which was the one I liked the best, called Buzkashi Boys. Interesting, about two little boys and living in this in the center of Kabul and the limited options they have.
And their fascination with the national sport, which basically is polo played with not a ball but a
goat,
beheaded goat. So,
And it's incredible. Also, Assad, about a Somali boy who needs to choose between
who wants to be a pirate, literally,
yes, or a fisherman, and that's very well. And the one, and I kept thinking of a more as I watched this film. It's 21 minutes long. It's called Henry. Again, a musician who's fading into dementia. And I thought it was as good or better than Amour in 21 minutes. Told the same story.
No kidding.
Yes.
Wow.
And
okay.
Again, I mean, we were only allowed to see one of the documentary shorts because, again, I pay HBO every month. I might as well tout them. They have snapped up the rights to the other four.
And they weren't showing them as part of these critics'
no,
packages.
No, but you can't see them if you go to the Tivoli and right. see them.
And so the documentaries will be out next weekend.
No, the live action animated this starting today
right.
at the Tivoli, and then the following week will be the documentary films.
That's what I said.
Next weekend,
the documentary films.
Because the documentary films are 3 hours and 26 minutes long, and there will be an intermission.
Oh, okay.
3 hours and 36 minutes long.
Well, as you know, a short film can be up to 50 minutes long.
Right.
To qualify, okay. So that's what happens.
The
there.
One I did see is called Innocente. It's about a 15-year-old girl, homeless girl in San Diego.
This
is the only one we were allowed to screen, and how arts and being an artist saves her life, basically. It's very good.
Wow. They all sound great. I love all that. Anything else, or does that wrap it up on the shorts?
That pretty much wraps it up.
Okay. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation about the latest art, independent, and foreign films now showing with Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Coming up in our second half, Stand Up Guys Quartet, and what else? Rust and Bone. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We'll be right back. back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation with the book doctors, you can find it in our weekend to-do list at kcur.org. On Monday's program, psychologist Harriet Lerner is back with her 7 steps to creating a remarkable relationship. You can do it in just 7 steps, and Harriet Lerner will tell us all about it. This hour, we're talking with our film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler, about the latest art independent foreign films now shown. We have a great list of films out right now. We're talking about all of them. How about a film, Cynthia Haynes, Stand Up Guys, an action film with some humor about elderly gangsters who reunite for one big night. Otherwise, this film could be called Geezers with Guns. Tell us about Stand Up Guys.
I think we have a theme going here, Bob and Steve. You've got some other movies to talk about concerning the aging process. I wanted to like this movie. I mean, we've got an amazing cast, Al Pacino, Christopher Walken, Alan Arkin, and it's just silly and lame.
Too bad.
Line is they don't make them like they used to, and referring
that's
to
for sure.
Al Pacino plays a guy named Val who's been released after 28 years in prison, and he refused to give up a criminal associate. So he's a stand-up guy. Christopher Walken was his best buddy. He picks him up, you know, when he gets out of prison, he's just biding his time until he dies. Val wants to party. He's missed so much. He's heard about this thing called Viagra. And then they break into a pharmacy, and he chugs the whole bottle of Viagra.
Oh, my God.
And so there's a running commentary and jokes about Viagra. And I just thought, come on, guys. I mean, at this level of acting, I mean, you just – I don't know, for the money or something. It was the guy who made it, Fisher Stevens, just really is not a good director.
No.
And he did not know what to do with these terrific characters. There are a few good one-liners. It's time to kick ass or chew gum. And guess what? I'm out of gum.
Oh, that's
you
hilarious.
Know, that's the level.
Cynthia Haynes is unhappy, she is unhappy.
Man.
This is not getting much from her. Anyone want to contradict?
I want to emphasize over and over. She's underselling how ghastly this movie is.
Oh, that's too bad.
Al Pacino and Walken are really terrible in it. They're caricatures of themselves. And I was lauding Walken earlier, a couple shows ago, about a late quartet. I thought he was tremendous.
He was good in that.
They are like caricatures of themselves and just stupidly directed. There's a scene where there's a cop car right at the passenger window, and Walken's going, "What's going on?" as if he's deaf, dumb, blind. I mean, what is that about? It just made me long for watching something like Dog Day Afternoon
was that film that came out a bunch of years ago that had sort of older guys committing a crime? And
I'm pretty sure you're thinking of Going in Style with Lee Strasberg. It was a pretty good little movie.
And Bob Butler, you don't disagree with any of this?
Well, you see, I haven't seen this movie because at my age, it's not the $10, it's the 2 hours.
Yeah.
you made a good decision there. It's really awful.
Well, despite all this, we do have a clip on for Stand Up Guys, Cynthia Haynes.
And we hear from Alan Arkin. He's the getaway driver. They've taken him out of a nursing home. I think he was on oxygen or something. And so he gets, you know, one last chance here. So we've got Arkin, Christopher Walken, and Al Pacino together.
You did your time like a man, Val. You were stand up all the way.
You and Doc would have done the same.
Well, I would like to think so.
It's possible. Either way is possible. But you did it, Val.
True. I can't believe you guys didn't work together all this time.
No.
Clap hands retired us. That was that.
And it was.
He can't forgive himself, so everybody else has got to pay.
Well, that film is an utter waste of time. Our critics are saying that's Stand Up Guys. But by noon today, we'll have our 3 to see up on our website, kcur.org. These are the top 3 films showing on area theaters that each of our critics recommend. So you can check out kcur.org later
and
on
Stand
today
Up Guys
find out.
Is not going to be
not
on that.
Not going to be on anyone's list. It doesn't
but
sound
I
like
but an utter waste of time. I wonder if the studio wants to borrow that for the ad.
There you go. More, though, the film we talked about in our first half will probably be on each of your lists.
Absolutely.
I think everyone's nodding their heads here. Okay. Bob Butler, let's go to Quartet. Not to be confused with The Last Quartet, this is a film about an aging opera diva who creates problems at a home for retired British musicians.
Okay, now I have invented a new movie genre. It's called geriexploitation.
There you go.
And the last version of it was, of course, the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. And these are.
I have that sitting at home.
There you
Netflix,
go. Yeah. These are old folk comedies, basically, and they're a little squishy and, you know, sentimental.
And there's more of them than we've seen in the past,
There seem to be a lot of them out there. Anyway, it's becoming a trend because, guess what? They've discovered that older people will go to see a movie if they can identify with it.
Right.
Well, there's an exception, though. The Stallone, the Bruce Willis, and the Schwarzenegger movies. Nobody's
yes,
going to those.
They all bombed in the last month or two.
Sure did. Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah. Anyway, what we've got here are four great British thespians, directed by none other than Dustin Hoffman. Mm-hmm. You've got Maggie Smith as a former opera diva who has finally run out of money and must move to a group home, which is run apparently by the British government for the benefit of former singers, musicians, and others from the opera and classical music world. She encounters her first husband, with whom she cheated. He's now he teaches opera and hip hop to local school kids. He's played by Tom Courtney, who is a great British stage actor who hasn't made that many movies. If you've seen Dr. Zhivago, you probably remember him from that. Are they going to get back together? Silly me for asking. You've also got Billy Connolly playing someone a lot older than he really is as a sort of a frat boy with white hair. And you have Pauline Collins of Shirley Valentine fame some time back who plays another opera singer who is just a bit, well, she's slowly and rather pleasantly losing it.
Again?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, there's nothing really wrong with this movie. It's been pretty well directed. It's just you see it coming and you don't have to duck because you know you can hold out your arms and embrace it. And that's...
Maggie Smith's never been hotter because of Downton Abbey.
Yep.
And, mm-hmm. and this is actually based on a very vividly remembered for me documentary called Tosca's Kiss that was about an actual residential facility for older Italian opera singers, and you have them in this documentary talking about their careers and trying to return to the arias. Look for that one if you want to see something that's a lot more moving.
I think that also was adapted into a stage play.
I bet it was.
And you could see, but it's not claustrophobic. I mean, so often when films are adapted from the stage, they just... they shouldn't be made into films, but this one...
This is actually pretty cinematic, and, you know, it's interesting. Hoffman, even if you think the foreground drama is contrived, he cast all the extras from real retired British musicians.
So
you see these guys sitting around the background doing soft shoes around a piano and or playing their trombone in the, you know, in the park or something. The background is absolutely authentic.
Why did it take Dustin Hoffman so long to decide to direct a film? He's 75 years old.
Possibly because he spent so much of his career being a pain to his directors.
Was he a pain?
I say that. He's a demanding guy. He knows what he wants. And he has the kind of attitude that if he was a woman would get him called all sorts of terrible things. Here's a guy who would make maybe one movie every other year. You had to assume that he put a lot of stock in what he was doing because... this was going to hold him, keep his reputation going, keep him in, you know, shiny shoes. And for that reason, he was picky, he was demanding. And he's had a great career, so who can, you know, you can't contradict him on that.
And he did well with this film, so he might do
others. Directing is hard, hard work, even with such a copacetic bunch as he had working here.
Does he go down in history as one of our top 10 American actors?
Yeah.
Of this generation, I would say.
He's up there with probably Brando and,
Is he?
A few other modern guys.
De Niro.
De Niro, I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. We have a clip here from Quartet.
And virtually all of the four actors I mentioned are in this. See if you can pick out their voices.
Wise man goes when he can, fool goes when he must.
Look, here's Jean in all her glory.
Oh, Jean. You haven't changed a jot.
Didn't I tell you? Didn't I say she still looks like a young girl? Reggie, don't I get a kiss? Reg? Now, I apologize for hurting you. Please be kind to me. We were different people then. There, I've been rehearsing that all the past week.
He's upset because he wasn't warned you were coming.
I'm not upset.
Oh, Reg. This is the first time we've seen each other in God knows how many years.
97.
Is it really that long? God, how time flies.
Isn't that lovely?
Very lovely.
I mean, really.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a sucker for music in the background of dialogue like that.
Yeah,
it always works
for me. They laid it in there pretty thick.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Pretty nice. Okay, let's move on as we're reviewing the latest art, independent, and foreign films here. Let's move on to Rust and Bone, a love story about a trainer of orca whales whose life has changed following a very tragic accident. Who's jumping on this?
I am. The Rust and Bone's been on my top three to see since it opened. Marion Cotillard plays this young woman who is kind of a mess. She's in a relationship that's really not working, that she doesn't care about. And she's at a bar, and she meets this bouncer because she gets in a fight in the bar. He's played by, this is going to be a stretch, Matthias Schoenaerts.
Sounds right.
And they meet, and then she is a trainer at a water park. And I don't think we're spoiling anything to say that there's an accident and she loses both of her legs below the knee. And that scene is filmed just unbelievably. So anyway, she's out. She's going to rehab. She remembers him, this bouncer, and she calls him and they reconnect. He's a young single dad who does bare knuckle fighting on the weekends. Mm. They're both filled with rage for various reasons. Both very flawed people, both very pretty people, and they have this unconventional love story, and I just think it's wonderful.
Well, every opportunity I had, I touted her performance. I do not understand why she hasn't gotten more awards for Rust and Bone. You know, I look at Jennifer Lawrence's performance in Silver Linings Playbook. Fine, it was probably the best performance in the movie, but what Marianne Cotillard went through to portray this character and how effective she was warranted some sort of attention this year, and I am absolutely flabbergasted that she hasn't gotten it.
And why wouldn't she?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
How does that happen in Hollywood?
People, they hold grudges in Hollywood. She won Best Actress for Le'Veon Rose when she was very young.
And that
they
might
just
do what you're
there
saying.
Were other performances. Why it's not nominated for digital effects is if it is, I didn't realize it
is.
It's beyond me because she's like they go swimming, they go to the beach, and you can't see the bottom half of her legs. They've digitally erased them. It's miraculous
it is.
To watch.
It is a very moving story. It's about giving and receiving love. And it's profound. It's beautifully shot.
Beautifully shot.
I mean, it is just – the performances are literally raw.
And there's –
I mean, an actress like that, I mean, she's selling expensive perfumes you know, she's in all the fashion magazines. But to play this without makeup, to play this, as I said, raw, is just, I thought, incredible.
And this film is showing where?
It is showing currently at one of the Fine Arts Theaters, I believe the Leawood.
And at the Fine Arts Theater, or Liberty Hall in Lawrence.
Oh, it is.
Mm-hmm. So you two can't say enough.
It's great. Well, and one thing I want to add about the music, a very interesting choice of music here. There's a scene where she's still not connected with people. She's still ashamed of how she looks, and she's drunk, and she's dancing around in her wheelchair to the B-52's Love Shack. Mm-hmm. And then there's this profound, again, scene at the end with this amazing, visceral remix of Bruce Springsteen's song State Trooper. I was like, it was one of the most incredible songs I'd heard in a long time, and a remix of which you wouldn't expect to show up in this French film. But it is.
This was directed by a fantastic director, Jacques Audiard. He also made The Prophet. This guy knows how to make great movies.
Well, I haven't heard you guys being this excited for a while. Rust and Bone is showing at the Glenwood at Redbridge.
Good.
Okay, Rust and Bone, very high praise from our film critics for that film. Steve Walker, let's go to the film Sister. A poor teenager steals from rich skiers at a Swiss resort.
Right. Also on my three to see for this week. It's directed by Ursula Meyer. It's about this 12-year-old kid who lives with his sister, so he tells people, who she's probably 26.
Yeah.
She has to be. They live in probably public housing at the base of this mountain in this very luxe, rich ski resort town in the Alps. Every morning he gets on the lift and goes up and just steals everything that's not nailed down, whether it's food or rummaging through people's pockets and their coats that are hanging in the chalets up there. Mm-hmm. He steals skis, boots.
Glasses, yeah.
And then he's got a little trade going. He's selling them to his peers down at the base of the mountain. And then he meets this cook who's kind of on to him, and he starts selling to the adults. And so what happens is that we really start to meet his sister, played by Lea Seydoux, who was just in Farewell, My Queen.
She's wonderful.
And so their relationship is very contentious. She's gone for days at a time and leaves this 12-year-old by
herself. She's a bit of a floozy.
Yeah.
She's looking for a sugar daddy.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting is what's interesting are the
so to speak
class differences
depicted
in this film. I think this movie is very much about that too, about these towns all and villages all over Europe where the rich come and have to be waited on hand and foot by people who will never be able to stay there. And we're seeing, and what one comment that stuck with me is that they have the same view. Them looking down on the town, him living at the base.
And looking up.
And the French title of the film is not Sister, and I will not try to pronounce it, but it translated, it's Child from On High.
Oh,
and
I like that title better.
It's much more appropriate. The two performances are incredible. 14-year-old Casey Klein is wonderful as the young boy. He's sort of a little feral kid who's just left on his own. One of the things that struck me is he prepared to go into this world of wealthy skiers. He puts on a ski helmet and these goggles and a ski mask. He's like an alien, and he gets on this gondola and he's taken to the top of the mountain. This is one of my favorite films so far this year. I hope it'll wind up on my list of 10 best.
Steve and I were talking about there's a kind of an interesting thing going on here. The Belgians, the Dardan brothers, and the French with the kid with the bike, and now this, a Swiss movie. Something about that part of Europe that really does great movies about kids at risk, I guess you'd call it. Mm. And they don't feel like, socially conscious,
in your face,
pictures.
Right.
They're about people, and they're pretty astonishing.
I don't know if this is based on a novel or it's an original screenplay, but it's so clever and smart and original and unlike anything
I've
ever seen.
And entertaining.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Sister is the name of the film. It's showing at the Crown Center. Okay?
Yes, right.
Yeah, all right. Again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the latest art independent foreign films now showing on area screens with our critics. They are, as always, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Let's move on to a documentary, Chasing Ice. It's about a photographer and climate change skeptic who captured striking images of very melting glaciers. Cynthia Haynes.
This film was at the Tivoli. It's currently showing at Liberty Hall in Lawrence. James Balog is a National Geographic photographer, and he's placed these specially designed cameras starting in about 2007 in Alaska, Iceland, Greenland, and Montana. And he became part of what's called the Extreme Ice Survey. And his cameras were programmed to take a picture once every hour for 3 years from the same position looking at an individual glacier. And it's the ultimate time-lapse photography. It is absolutely stunning.
I've seen the previews for it. You sort of see.
It really is amazing. This is a guy obsessed. He risks serious injury to himself partaking in this project. And let me just say, he's a believer as a result of this.
After what he's seen.
Yeah.
After what his photographs have shown him.
Right. Yeah. And it was directed by Jeff Orlowski, who did a very good job piecing all of this together. And actually, an original song was written for the movie called Before My Time and has been nominated for an Oscar.
I don't remember a song.
There was. Okay. I think it was over the credits.
Well, we have a clip here from Chasing Ice, Cynthia.
Yes, it's James explaining his position.
You know, we're really in the midst of geologic scale change. You know, our brains are programmed to think that geology is something that happened a long time ago or will happen a long time in the future. And we don't think that that can happen during these little years that we each live on this planet. But the reality is that it does, that things can happen very, very, very quickly. We're living through one of those moments of epochal geologic change right now. And we humans are causing it.
That's from Chasing Ice. Okay.
It is very good, and it's not a lecture like Al Gore's film.
Thank goodness.
The photography is amazing. I mean, you cannot deny seeing this, that this ice is going away.
Yeah.
And you get his quest and his urgency, especially when he goes back and checks some of these cameras a year later, and they've malfunctioned. He has nothing. So he just keeps, you know, his eye on the prize.
They malfunctioned, so he continues.
He had nothing. Yes, and so he fixed the cameras, and then, and these are like remote outposts, you know, where he had to
go. Wow.
It's very good movie.
Mm. Cynthia, two of your favorite films of the year are no longer showing, and you aren't real pleased about
well,
that, it doesn't sound like.
This is just a heads up in case they're out on DVD before we meet again. Barbara, about a dissident doctor working in 1980s East Germany who's banished to a small country hospital. Wonderful movie starring Nina Hoss. She was in A Woman in Berlin. Just amazing movie. And the documentary, Deanna Vreeland. The Eye Has to Travel, a wonderful companion
this
piece.
This is terrific.
I love this movie.
Yeah.
If you don't know who Deanna Vreeland was, just Google her, and there's clips, and you can see she ran Vogue. She was the editor of Vogue for
Fashion
20 years.
At Harper's Bazaar.
And then Vogue.
Editor-in-chief of Vogue, yeah. Right.
And then
right.
She helped co-found the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
She didn't
She's a fascinating woman.
She didn't design clothes, but by the way she presented them in the pages of her magazine, she made fashion tangible.
She's a very strange woman, but she's fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a well-done documentary, companion piece to September issue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Bob Butler, you have some magnificent events going on at the library that bring the movies to life for us.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night. This Sunday, 1:30, Plaza Library, All About Eve, Betty Davis at her catty best.
It's one of my five top movies of all time, guys.
And, which possibly
it's
the
All About Eve.
All About Eve.
Yeah.
Possibly the best dialogue ever in a Hollywood
movie.
Yes,
absolutely.
She has one line that just slays me every time. She's talking about her younger boyfriend. She says, Bill's 32. He looks 32. He looked 32 10 years ago. He'll look at 20 years from now. I hate men. Now that's writing. Anyway, got some other things coming up. Next Wednesday at the Plaza Library, are you familiar with Virgil Thompson? Kansas City's homegrown composer of operas and movie scores. He's the subject of a PBS documentary that is now being worked on. The makers are going to be bringing their clips, showing it, and talking about their quest to find Virgil Thompson. That's Wednesday at 6:30 at the Plaza Library. And one last one. We all saw Lincoln. Remember David Strathairn playing
Seward?
Seward?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a biographer of Seward going to be here this Tuesday at the downtown library. He's doing Lincoln's Indispensable Man, and it is a... Is he going to be on air with you?
He already was.
He already was.
Okay.
I heard it this week.
Interesting guy.
Yeah.
Interesting take on a very important man that people have tended to forget about. Steve Walker, what do you want to mention?
Just real quick, I got an email this morning reminding me that this... the 16th and 17th is the Greater Kansas City Japanese Film Festival. They're showing five different films through the Kansas City Art Institute as the main sponsor. I saw a couple of them last year that I had never seen. They were brand new films, lovely films. So check out their website, and we'll probably put a link to it on ours.
And Cynthia Haynes?
A couple of things at the Tivoli. KCPT Community Cinema presents Soul Food Junkies. It's a free screening and discussion of the Tivoli tomorrow, February the 9th at 11 a.m.
And I've seen it. It's a really fun movie.
It's about the history and social significance of soul food.
Yep.
And then the National Theater live at the Tivoli, John Lithgow in The Magistrate, Sunday, February 10th at 1:30.
All right, well, give us some reasons to live here, Cynthia, with some coming attractions, things coming down the road here that we should be looking for.
Well, there's a film that's nominated for Best Documentary, and Steve, you're pretty passionate about The Invisible War.
Very much so, The Invisible War, right, about the prevalence of rape in the military and how it's completely been hushed up, hidden.
Against men and women.
Exactly. Against men and women. It's been hidden up and hushed because many of the perpetrators are their officers they have to report to.
Oh, boy.
And I actually think that this film was instrumental. They've shown it around Washington, and some changes have already been made about how these crimes are reported.
Panetta has referenced that film when he was Department of
You know, what other film?
Let's see, CIA? Yeah.
One other film coming out, 56 Up. This is, I've seen some of these installments. Decades-long documentary project that began in 64 follows 10 boys and 4 girls from age 12 until age 56.
Steve Walker, I rented...
Till 7. They started at 7, actually.
Yeah. 7 years old.
Yeah.
So I rented the entire series from the Lawrence Public Library, and for 14 hours, not straight, I watched every single episode.
Wow.
And it was better at the time than Downton Abbey, let me tell you. And being able to see them all at the same time was incredible, and then to see 56 Up and see where they are today. Was an absolute thrill.
This opens up March 8th, next month, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how about West of Memphis? Again, a topic we've covered on this program, a documentary about three teens imprisoned for a murder they claim they didn't commit, and I don't think they did commit it. Yeah.
Paradise Lost in 1996, a documentary came out. Paradise Lost 2 in 1999. This is the third film that deals with this horrific crime.
The West by Memphis 3.
By different filmmakers.
Yes.
The first two were by Joe Berliner. Anyway, this is a woman did this one, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of an omnibus version that takes it from the very beginning to the very
But it lends more credence to who might have killed these little boys than the other films does, I think.
Well, we have steered the battleship into port in a perfect timing here. Just terrific, guys. Thank you so much for coming in. As always, you can find a complete list of our films our critics talked about today and more information about our broadcast at kcur.org, including you can go there and see their three to see from Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Monday on the program, psychologist Harriet Lerner returns with her 7 steps to creating a remarkable relationship. Our show's theme music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help this week from KCUR's Kim Noble, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.